This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.
The Federal Trade Commission bans the use of non-compete contracts with employees. And how U.S. support for Israel is shaping a crucial Democratic primary election in Pennsylvania.
It's really a huge deal out here in Western Pennsylvania and in Pittsburgh specifically because the race by some is seen kind of as a referendum on how voters are viewing the issue with Israel and the war in Gaza.
Plus, Columbia University moves to hybrid classes for the rest of the semester amid protests over the Israel-Hamas war. It's Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Sabrina Siddiqui for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. The Federal Trade Commission today banned employers from using non-compete contracts to prevent most workers from joining rival firms. The move is popular with labor, but faces an imminent court challenge from business groups. It's the first time in over 50 years that FTC officials have issued a regulation to mandate an economy-wide change in how companies compete. The rule prohibits companies from enforcing existing non-compete agreements on anyone other than senior executives. Wall Street Journal reporter Dave Michaels joins me with more. Dave, what is behind the FTC's decision to crack down on non-compete agreements?
Well, this is part of a stricter approach to antitrust enforcement that the FTC has been carrying out during the Biden administration. And it is also part of an effort to elevate workers and labor in the eyes of antitrust law, to essentially make sure that antitrust law, which speaks to how businesses compete, that it also has room and thinks about how businesses compete for the labor of workers.
And what are the implications of this ruling?
Well, the rule has huge implications, even in the near term. It essentially invalidates almost all existing non-compete contracts between employers and employees. It does preserve existing non-compete contracts that affect senior executives, but it says that in the future, companies can't impose new non-competes on senior executives.
How are we expecting business groups to respond?
Well, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has already said that it plans to sue to try to block the rule and have it invalidated as soon as tomorrow, which is really quite, in a way, kind of remarkable because businesses, when they sue over regulations, they typically take some time to review these rules. But this rule has provoked such a sharp backlash from the biggest business trade groups that the FTC will be in court in relatively short time trying to argue to a federal court why the agency has this authority to do this.
That was The Wall Street Journal's Dave Michaels. A Moscow court rejected an appeal by Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich against his detention today, meaning the U.S. citizen who has been awaiting trial for over a year will remain behind bars until at least June 30th. Gershkovich is being held on an allegation of espionage that he, the journal, and the U.S. government vehemently deny. The State Department has declared him wrongfully detained. The designation commits the government to work for his release. Russian investigators haven't publicly presented evidence to support their allegation against Gershkovich. Russian officials have said Moscow is acting in accordance with its laws. Tesla's first quarter profit plunged as pressure mounts on chief executive Elon Musk to better articulate his vision for the electric car maker's future. The Texas-based car company reported net income of $1.1 billion for the January to March period, down 55% from the year prior. Revenue fell 9% to $21.3 billion. The world's most valuable automaker is in a more precarious place than it has been in years, with its vehicle sales falling, demand cooling for electric vehicles industry-wide, and Musk placing greater emphasis on developing a fully autonomous car. Columbia University will allow students to attend classes virtually for the rest of the semester, with protests over the Israel-Hamas war continuing to roil campuses across the country. Colombia has struggled to contain pro-Palestinian protests that have escalated at the New York City campus since Thursday. Pro-Palestinian students at several other universities have followed Colombia's lead and staged their own campus protests in what is the biggest escalation to date of campus tensions over the war that began last fall. Demonstrators are calling on the schools to divest from corporations that do business with Israel. Coming up, how Democratic Party divisions over the Israel-Hamas war are shaping a primary contest in Pennsylvania. That's after the break.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. Oracle.com/wallstreet.
Democratic divisions over Israel will be put to the test today as voters head to the polls in Pennsylvania. Congresswoman Summer Lee, a vocal critic of U.S. policy toward Israel, is facing a primary challenge from Edgewood Borough Councilmember Bhavani Patel in a race that could offer a window into how the politics of the Israel-Hamas war might play out in November. Joining me now is Wall Street Journal reporter Chris Maher, who is based in Pittsburgh and has been reporting on the race. Chris, why is this primary so significant?
Well, it's significant in terms of Congress generally because Republicans have such a narrow majority there. It's really a huge deal out here in Western Pennsylvania and in Pittsburgh specifically because the race by some is seen kind of as a referendum on how voters are viewing the issue with Israel and the war in Gaza.
Lee, who is part of a progressive coalition of House Democrats known as the Squad, has condemned Hamas in public statements, calling the October 7th attacks horrifying and unjustifiable. Although Lee has the backing of establishment Democrats, some voters in her district are frustrated that she called for a ceasefire in Gaza just 9 days after the attack. When she spoke to you, Chris, she said views on the war have shifted.
What I think is going to impact every election is whether or not we are being responsive to our constituents instead of our lobbyists. When we see the mass majority of the American electorate say that they want a ceasefire, that they don't want unconditional aid going to Benjamin Netanyahu, and then we do it anyways, I think that is going to impact them, not me taking a stance with the electorate. It's them taking a stance against it.
The Hamas attack and the rise of anti-Semitism in the U.S. have made the debate especially resonant in Pittsburgh. In 2018, a gunman killed 11 worshippers at the Tree of Life Synagogue in the city's Squirrel Hill neighborhood. It was the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. Patel says Lee's views are divisive at a time of rising anti-Semitism in the U.S.
Emotions are incredibly raw. I mean, there's a palpable feeling of fear and a rise in anti-Semitism. And to not have regard for the community in that way, I think is, you know, it's disheartening. It makes you think, you know, what is the purpose of... You know, public servants have an obligation, right, to be present for the community and to be supportive in times of pain. That is the leadership that we deserve.
Chris, based on your conversations with voters, how is the war impacting their decision at the ballot box? How do they view Lee's position?
So the wounds here in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh are still really fresh from the 2018 shooting in the synagogue. And there have been some acts of anti-Semitism. There's been some vandalism of synagogues here. And many of the people, the voters in the Jewish community here are still, you know, very upset about that. And so everything that's happening in Israel is just very fresh for voters. And they've been upset with Summer Lee's votes on a number of issues, some resolutions, and some of the aid packages for Israel that she's voted against. And that's just angered a lot of people here. There were some, about 40 rabbis and cantors who sent her two letters, one in October, one in March, just expressing how disappointed they are with her positions and, you know, hoping that they could have more of a dialogue and sort of feeling like she has not really been listening to the community and representing her constituents. When I spoke to Summer Lee recently, she acknowledged that there's still a lot of tensions with Jewish leaders, and she said that she feels that Democratic voters are kind of coming around to her position on the ceasefire, and that, you know, even though this might hurt her politically, she's still sticking with her positions and, you know, things that she believes are right.
Another issue is whether or not Lee is supporting President Joe Biden's reelection. She says she is.
We're going to make sure that the person who's sitting in the White House is not going to be replaced. None of us are here to ever allow Trump and his cult and his ilk and his movement to come and ravish us the way that they have before.
Those words don't go far enough for Patel, who says Lee is hedging in her support for Biden even as he faces former President Donald Trump in November.
The thing that really alarms most people is the fact that she's hedging on Biden. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, this desire to reject extremism as it relates to Donald Trump is a big concern, because I think people are really, you know, they're struggling with the idea, and as we all should, is what another mm-hmm. 4 years of Donald Trump looks like. The question then becomes, like, how can you not, right? How can you not say that you're going to do mm-hmm. this?
Chris, how are voters perceiving this, and how much of an issue is this for the president's reelection bid?
I'm hearing the concerns that Patel is expressing echoed by voters, especially in this Squirrel Hill neighborhood, among Jewish voters in particular. A lot of people I've spoken to said that Summer Lee is playing kind of a dangerous game by saying that she's willing to criticize Biden now. She's not willing to denounce the uncommitted movement. From Summer Lee's perspective, she's saying that what she's doing is really expanding the tent for Democrats. She's building a bigger coalition, and that once we get closer to November, Democrats are all going to rally behind Biden. Although for some voters that I've spoken to, her support is just not strong enough at this point.
And what are some of the challenges Patel faces while running against Lee?
One of the biggest challenges for Patel, I think, is just running against an incumbent. Even though Lee is a first-term Congress member, she still has just much more widespread name recognition. Just this past weekend, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was here in Pittsburgh campaigning on her behalf. She's got many, many leaders. She far out-fundraised Patel. So the headwinds for Patel are significant. She really is going to have to turn out voters, and the voters who are very energized, especially over Israel, are really going to have to turn out for her.
Do you think that we're going to see this fight over the war and developments in the Middle East play out in other primaries too?
So I think you will see that. I think that is happening. And this primary here in Western Pennsylvania is a good indicator of the direction that voters are moving toward. The turnout and the vote margin is going to say a lot about how voters are feeling in Pennsylvania in particular. It's extremely close. The margins have been about 1 percentage point or less the past two elections. And it's going to help determine who eventually gets in the White House.
That was the Wall Street Journal's Chris Maher. And before we go, we want to hear your questions about the pay disparity between men's and women's pro sports. Iowa superstar and WNBA draft first pick Caitlin Clark only gets a $76,000 starting salary next year. The number one pick in the NBA draft, Victor Wembanyama's base pay is over $12 million. Send us a note with your questions, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That's WNPOD@WSJ.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and location, because we might use it on the show. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi and Pierre Bienname, with supervising producer Michael Kosmidis. I'm Sabrina Siddiqui for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.